Hi, I'm Ken Kessler, and welcome to the Sounds of Christmas podcast. If you're new to this podcast, I want to start by saying thanks for joining us. If you're not new, welcome back. Either way, I'm very glad you're here. Now, to avoid any confusion, I want to say that there won't be any music played here. This is a place for conversation. I'll talk about Christmas music and some related topics, sometimes by myself and sometimes with guests. If you're looking for music, just go to soundsofchristmas.com and click on the tree or the player on the front page or on the Listen Now page. We play the best variety of Christmas music all year long. Well, except in October, when we play the best variety of Halloween music. I am so lucky that I get to do this podcast and talk to people whose music has meant a lot to me, and that is definitely true on today's episode as I welcome singer Jane Monheit to the podcast. Jane, thanks so much for being on the podcast today. I have been a fan for a long time, and I wanted to do a really nice introduction for you, but I need to ask you some questions first. I see that you get mentioned as a jazz singer, as a pop singer, as a standard singer, as a jazz, pop, standards, Broadway vocalist, and I feel like those are all good, but I'm not sure any of them are quite right, and I don't want you to feel like I'm trying to pigeonhole you into something. I notice on your Facebook page, it just says artist. Do you have a preference for any of those?
I really don't have a preference because the thing is, I truly love all of those things. I think at the center of all of it is my great love for the Great American Songbook. So, you know, being like a representative of the songbook, a bearer of the torch, you know, that's how I think of myself. I don't tend to go like, oh, I'm a jazz singer, I'm a cabaret singer, I'm a musical theater singer, I'm a pop singer. I never think of it in those terms. I'm just sort of like, I'm a vocalist and I sing all kinds of material, but at the center of it is the Great American Songbook.
And one of the things that I really love about your music, Christmas and otherwise, is this love of, as you say, the Great American Songbook, and it really comes through. And it's not just, I don't want to say just the hits, but you know what I mean. It's not just Unforgettable. It's a lot of songs. It's that you're keeping these songs alive, because there's a lot of great songs that just kind of fall by the wayside. And it's so great to hear fresh, you know, new blood pumped into them.
Absolutely. You know, I think that keeping these songs current is a really important thing to do. I mean, the Great American Songbook is one of our country's like greatest gifts to culture in the world. You know what I mean? These songs are timeless and should be brought to new generations. And I'm proud to be able to do that.
Now, if I've done the math right, you've released 11 studio albums plus two with David Benoit, and 10 of those made it into the top five of Billboard's jazz charts. Another one was top 10. Another one was top 15. Your first three albums also made it onto the indie charts, and your second album, Come Dance With Me, was number five on the indie charts. So it seems like I'm not the only one that is trying to put a label on you.
Well, I think labels are, you know, for consumers, so they know where to find us. You know what I mean? It used to be like, you know, what section of the record store were you looking at? Now it's like, what kind of Spotify playlist do I choose? Yeah. You know what I mean? So I think those labels help people find us and identify us, but I don't think we really use them to describe ourselves a whole lot, you know?
I mentioned all of those placements on the charts. So anybody who's listening understands that a lot of people have a lot of enthusiasm for your work. It's not just me saying that. Was singing and performing something that was always on your radar?
Oh, since birth. I mean, since birth. You could have asked me as a toddler what I was going to do when I grew up, and I would have said, oh, I'm going to sing this music. I'm going to be a jazz singer. You know, I would have said that. I've loved these songs since I was born. My family raised me on this music, but they also raised me on great musical theater, on lots of good bluegrass. My dad's a banjo player, you know. So I also had the music of my own generation. I mean, I was obsessed with like Whitney Houston, you know what I mean? So I really had it coming from everywhere. And the entire time, my whole life, I was like, I'm going to be a singer. The only thing that like wavered at all was what genre I wanted to go into. I remember for a while when I was a teenager, I was like, oh, I'm going to go into musical theater. And for a while I was like, ah, but I want to be like Maura O'Connell and go into bluegrass. You know what I mean? But ultimately, I think the decision was made for me because of the college I decided to go to. There was a voice teacher I really wanted to study with, Peter Eldridge of the New York Voices. He taught at Manhattan School of Music. And so I said, I'm going there. It was the only school I applied to. I was a brave one. And the only school I apply to, and it's this fancy conservatory, and I'm just like, I'll get in. I was a very confident kid. So that was my path, you know what I mean? Straight to jazz.
And Never Neverland, your first album, what an amazing debut. It stayed on the charts for a whole year. I mean, even in your wildest dreams, I can't believe that you imagined that, even if you're so confident of success.
Oh no. I mean, I was going to be perfectly happy just sort of singing at bars in New York City and doing people's weddings and things like that. I just wanted to be a singer. So when all of that sort of additional success occurred, it was a wild time. It was a crazy ride, and it wasn't all positive. Do you know what I mean? Like, it came with a lot of weirdness and negativity. As soon as you're that successful, people really try to control your every move. And it was a strange time, you know, very weird. I got a lot of very negative press because I was really young and people were like, she's bad for jazz and all of this stuff. It was weird, but I'm very grateful, you know, to my very first record label, Encoded Music. Carl Griffin, who's still around, still in the industry, was the president at that time. And he was wonderful. He took good care of me.
It must have been difficult, because I know that in some of the interviews that I've read about you, you've talked about how important the song selection is to you. And it must have been difficult, especially as a woman in the entertainment business, trying to call your own shots.
You know, it's funny. At the very beginning, I didn't have trouble calling the shots musically because I had a producer who really believed in me, and that was the great Joel Dorn. He's a legend. He passed away it'll be 15 years in December, and I still miss him every single day. He was like another dad to me, you know. And he really had my back. So I really got to make all my choices. I chose every song on every record from day one. There was only one record that I really got messed with on in terms of song choices. And still, even on that record, ultimately everything came down to me. I just got pressured a lot to do certain things.
I'm sure. And, you know, running the Sounds of Christmas station, I get about 1,000 songs sent to me every year from record labels and hopeful bands and everything in between. A lot of them aren't quite ready for prime time yet. And a lot of them, a lot of them have that feeling of kind of phoning it in. Like the label said, you need to do a Christmas record. So here's one more version of Jingle Bell Rock, and it doesn't have anything unique about it that is in the style that band usually does. It's the same. If I didn't tell you who it was, you wouldn't know. And your stuff is familiar and also unique, because the arrangements are just outstanding. So if you see that, you know, the new album, The Merriest, starts off with Let It Snow, Let It Snow, Let It Snow, but it doesn't sound like a million other versions of that song.
Well, that arrangement was written by Michael Kanin, who has been my pianist for over 20 years and, you know, remains my pianist on the East Coast. You know, I have different musicians that I work with now around the world, because plane tickets are so expensive that it's next to impossible to bring one band all over the world. So now I have a wonderful East Coast band, a wonderful West Coast band, and a wonderful European band. And so Michael remains in the East Coast band, and he wrote that arrangement, and he wrote a couple others for the album. And he is, you know, a true brother to me. So when he writes for me, he writes from this place where he knows me so well. He knows exactly what I want to hear in an arrangement. And so, you know, he writes really great charts for me. He really does. He's a treasure in my life.
The new album, The Merriest, is just out. It's your second Christmas album. What is it that led you to revisit Christmas music?
Oh, I've wanted to make another one since I made the first one. I was just waiting until it was long enough. You know, I knew I had to wait at least 10 years. And then I ended up waiting seven more. You know, it's been 17 years total just because situations in the business and other projects I was working on and stuff like that. But I've been waiting to make this record because I am that crazy Christmas woman. Like, I am obsessed. I put my tree up every year on November 4th. This is the day after my birthday. So it's November 4th, the tree goes up. And I'm obsessed with Christmas. So, and I love these songs so much. They're beautiful tunes. They're part of the Great American Songbook. It's just, we only get to really enjoy them for like a month or two out of the year. So I've really been looking forward to doing this record for a long time.
There are plenty of songs on the new album that everybody will recognize, but the lead single isn't very well known. How did you come to choose Christmas Stay With Me for the album?
Well, that song will be very easily recognizable to musical theater fans because that is a song from a beautiful, one of my favorite musicals of all time by Cy Coleman. Came out in the 90s, I think when I was maybe in high school. It's called, maybe junior high, I don't know, I'm not sure of the exact year. It's called City of Angels, this fabulous musical, amazing songs. And this tune, Stay With Me, is from the musical. The Christmas lyric was written separately, does not appear in the show, but was written, I believe, for Liza Minnelli to sing maybe on a television event or something like that. The lyricist, David Zippel, is a friend of mine. So he sent me the tune and was like, man, do you think you might like to record this? And I was like, yes, this tune is gorgeous. This would be beautiful. You know, so then we threw on the strings, Joel Fromm on tenor saxophone, who is probably one of the great, not probably, definitely one of the greatest living tenor players. Up there with Joshua Redman and Mark Turner and everybody, you know. Yeah, so it became this beautiful, lush track. You know, we decided to make it a bossa nova instead of just a straight ahead ballad. And it's gorgeous and romantic. Yeah.
Is there a process that you use to pick out the songs you want to record? Or do people bring songs to you? Or is it a little bit of both?
Usually it's just me. You know, I end up with all kinds of, you know, master lists of things in my phone, in the 400 notebooks I always have around me. You know what I mean? 5 million lists. And then I narrow it down. You know, I base it on a couple of factors. Number one, what I think will be nice on a record, what I think the audience is looking for, what I think my listeners will like, because I've gotten to know them very well over the years. I have a pretty good idea, I think, of what people want to hear, you know? And then it's, you know, my label is so wonderful, Club 44 Records. They're just like, do you make the record you want to make? And they just support me in that endeavor. It's beautiful. They don't try to control me artistically. They don't try to control my image, nothing. They just love me for who I am. And so I can go to them and say, these are the songs I want to do, and this is the kind of album I want to make. And they'll say, yeah, honey, let's do it. It's miraculous.
Wow. Yeah.
It's amazing. They are the nicest people in show business, I'm sure of it.
How different was it from recording this new album from when you recorded The Season?
Oh, really different. Really, totally just a different time. When we recorded The Season, it was 2005, and so, you know, the business was prospering. You know, we had a way bigger budget. We had a way more expensive studio. I co-produced it with the great Al Schmidt, for Pete's sake. The man has had more Grammys than like anyone ever. You know what I mean? So it was just a much more, big project. We took tons of time in the studio, you know, recorded video, all of that. You know, it was very much a 2000s era record. Now, we're making records the old fashioned way, where we're in and out of the studio in 2 or 3 days. You know, we're saving money left and right. We are saving money because you don't need to spend $50,000 to $100,000 to make a great jazz record. You know what I mean? You don't. You can, and it's nice to be able to do that and have a gorgeous, huge budget to be able to spend on promotion and everything else. But that's just not the way the business is looking these days. So we made the album, you know, had the arrangements, some of them, ready for years. Went into the studio, did the tracking in 2 days, and then I did an additional day for vocals. Actually, no, a day and a half, I think, for vocals. Yeah.
The second song on the new album, The Christmas Song, lots of amazing vocalists have recorded it over the years. When you have a song that has that kind of history that evokes so many legendary singers, is it a little bit daunting to be sort of stepping into their shoes?
You know, I don't get frightened of that anymore because after Over the Rainbow, nothing is scary anymore. You know?
Yeah, I bet.
After you get away with that, you're no, but you know what it is? I think the secret is really having a deep emotional connection to the songs. That's what makes the difference. If you are connected to the tune, if you are telling the truth and singing from the heart, your version will always matter, no matter who you are.
And that's something that really comes through, especially on the new album. These are a bunch of songs that most people will know, but you know, I listened to the Christmas song from you and I believe you. It doesn't feel
that's the best compliment.
Well, it doesn't feel, you know, radio, traditional radio plays the same Christmas songs, like a list of 100 songs over and over, and they lose the magic when you hear, I love Bing Crosby. When you hear White Christmas by Bing Crosby every hour, starting in the middle of November, it loses that magic. And Bing had so many great Christmas songs, but that's the one they zero in on. But when I, you know, when I listen to you doing the Christmas song, it's fresh and new, and it does sound like you mean what you're singing. It doesn't sound
you are
very welcome. It doesn't sound like this is a, it doesn't sound like it's a job. It sounds like, you know, it's real.
Well, it's not a job. It is real. You know what I mean? Our job is getting on airplanes. That's my job. My job is flying everywhere, coach. That's my job. Singing is a privilege. You know, singing is a privilege.
John Pizzarella is featured with you on That Holiday Feeling. You've worked with him before, and this is another great classic song that you just don't hear anymore. Is there anything in particular that made you pick that song or bring John in, or both?
Well, honestly, I love that tune. I love the Stephen Eady recording so much. I love Stephen Eady. I love Edie Gourmet. Such a gorgeous voice, insane voice, you know what I mean? But I love the two of them. Their recordings are adorable and warm-hearted and romantic and just, I love it. So I loved that tune for a million years, and I knew I wanted to record it, and there was no question in my mind that it had to be John. I've worked with John so much over the years. We've toured together, we've recorded together, we've done TV together, we've hung out until the million o'clock in the morning together, you know what I mean, on the road. I've known him for a long time. He's a wonderful guy. But for that particular kind of real charming, like warm-hearted tune, like his voice is the most perfect thing. Who could be better than John Pizzarelli? I adore him. I'm his biggest fan. Honestly, I'm his biggest fan.
You know, and you mentioned Stephen Eady. It amazes me that more of their Christmas songs don't show up on Christmas albums anymore. They did so many that were, I don't know if they were the original, but that were fairly unique to them. And That Holiday Feeling is a great example, another classic song that you don't get to hear anymore. So I was delighted to see that on your track list.
Thanks.
The title track, The Merriest, is a song that you did on your YouTube channel a couple years ago, along with Winter Wonderland. And both of those are on the new album. So this has been in the works for at least 2 years, right?
Yeah, I've been collecting the arrangements for a long time. And I decided to re-record the ones that went to YouTube because they were just like thrown together little YouTube videos. They weren't proper studio recordings. The arrangements were fantastic and I love playing them live. So I was like, I want to properly document these. There's another song on the album that I re-recorded as well, which is What Are You Doing New Year's Eve? Now that tune, which is my favorite of all holiday tunes, although technically I think it was not meant to be sung during Christmas time. I'm not sure. I'd have to like look into some Frank Lesser history to know about that. But the reason why I re-recorded it is because it was a bonus track on my first Christmas album for Borders. Borders is unfortunately long gone. Wow. So there's no finding that track anymore unless you bought the CD at Borders 17 years ago and still have a way to listen to it. What Are You Doing New Year's Eve doesn't exist anymore. So we re-recorded it this time with strings. And it's lovely. Love that tune.
Another song that a lot of people probably don't have access to is The Christmas Place. And you gave that away to people on YouTube 7, 8 years ago. Is there any chance that's going to show up again?
Well, you know, I considered re-recording it for this album. I did. But honestly, that original recording that I did when I lived in upstate New York, you know, a million years ago with my dear friends that lived up there, that recording was so perfect to me that I didn't want to change it or redo it. But yeah, it's out there on YouTube if anybody wants to listen.
I mentioned this is your second Christmas album, but you were also featured on David Benoit's album Believe 6 or 7 years ago. And a couple of those songs made it onto the Merriest re-recorded. But that makes me wonder if there's some leftovers for another Christmas album.
Oh, I will definitely make another Christmas album one day. Definitely. It's hard, you know, it's with repertoire, it's difficult because you're limited. But, you know, I've always wanted to do something more with the old carols, you know, get more into my bluegrass side, you know, call, you know, a mandolin player, a dobro player, a fiddler, and get into some carols. You know what I mean? I've always kind of wanted to do something like that, but that might be a little too left for my listeners. I don't know.
You've performed with some of the biggest names in pop and jazz, Michael Bublé, Wynton Marsalis, Ramsey Lewis. Is there anybody, do you have like a bucket list of anybody that you still want to try to perform with? Anybody still
Yes.
alive, I should say.
No, I totally do. And it's Take Six. I'm obsessed with Take Six. They're my heroes. And I know like every now and then I'll do some sort of collaboration with another vocalist. If I ever get to sing with Take Six in my life, I will be happy and can just retire right then.
Okay, so if anybody listening knows one of the guys in Take Six, Ken at soundsofchristmas.com, and I will get you guys connected. I'm sure that there are people who are listening to this who are at some stage of the beginning of their musical career, or maybe not even to that point yet, but they're just thinking that they'd like to do that one day, and they would love to sing with you. And there's sort of an opportunity to do that in a way. You teach singing lessons, voice lessons, and
I do.
people could go to your website, janemonheitonline.com, and click on lessons to find out more. And maybe one of these days, somebody that does that will ask you to sing on their Christmas album. Or has that already happened?
Let's see. Well, I've sung on a lot of people's records. I'm trying to think what Christmas work I've done besides the David Benoit. I can't remember. But no, I do teach, and you know, you can also contact me on Instagram and if you want to book a lesson. And yeah, I don't teach very, you know, formal technical voice lessons. It's more like I'm helping people to develop into jazz singers and be good musicians, good band leaders, and learn about style and, you know, all of that kind of stuff, you know.
The album is just out, and you're kind of in the middle of a tour. We were able to connect between flights. With all that going on, it almost seems silly to ask, but what's next, other than maybe some R&R?
Well, you know, the touring is kind of nonstop. You know, we're in and out all the time, and I love that. You know, it's good to keep going. But I definitely hope to make another album sooner than later. You know, I'm not sure exactly what the project will be yet. I've got a few ideas, but not sure what we will actually go through with and execute yet. But you know, a Christmas album, it's like you kind of want to follow it up a little quickly, you know, with something
Yeah.
else. So I'm kind of hoping to do that. Release something else maybe in like 2024 or something.
Is there anything about the Merriest that we didn't get to that you think people would like to know or that you'd just like to share?
Well, you know, one thing that makes this record special is that the band are very near and dear to my heart. Now, this happens on almost every record and certainly on every gig, and that's really important to me. You know, I really believe that having all that love on the bandstand in the studio, like being there with your closest friends, you know, it really makes the music better. When you're listening to the record, you're hearing me and my husband and two of our best friends. No, four of our best friends. You know? So it's kind of a nice aspect. There was a lot of love in the room.
Are those some of the same people in the videos for The Merriest and Winter Wonderland?
Different. Well, my husband is in the videos and on the record. But the gentlemen that are in the videos are my East Coast band. That's Michael Kanin and Neil Minor, who arranged Let It Snow, the Christmas song, and Neil arranged The Merriest. And Michael also arranged Winter Wonderland. But on the album, we recorded in LA, so I have my West Coast band, which includes my husband. My husband is in every band. Although he doesn't come on the road with me much because we have a teenager in high school, so he stays home with him. But I keep it in the family. Everybody I work with, I'm very close to.
I meant to mention this before, but when The Season came out, my favorite track has to be your version of Merry Christmas, Darling.
Oh, and that's my favorite too.
Well, as I've mentioned, I get a lot of songs sent to me every year. So I hear a lot of versions of that. And I got to tell you, that is the second most beautiful version that I've heard, I think, since Karen Carpenter sang it. The first is my wife, and I might be a little biased there. She's the first one.
You're so sweet.
But
that's so sweet.
But it really is just so beautiful. And that's one of those songs that has got to be, I don't want to say daunting, but Karen Carpenter had such an amazing and unique voice. And it was just absolutely beautiful when she put that out. It's another one of those songs that you sing it, and I feel like I believe you.
Oh, thank you. I mean, that's honestly the biggest compliment a singer could get.
And I just would encourage, if you haven't heard that song on The Sounds of Christmas yet, even if you have, go check it out. Stream it on Spotify or on Jane's YouTube channel. Speaking of all that kind of stuff, what is the best way for people to connect with you?
Instagram is the best way. That my Facebook page is just an artist page, and I don't use it. I'm never on there. I don't read the comments. I don't respond to the comments. It's I just don't use Facebook. But Instagram is me, and I'm always right there. So people can contact me there. I love being able to connect with people. It's really a nice thing. Twitter as well.
Do you post pictures from the road?
Oh, yeah. I post all kinds of stuff. Okay. Posted some very silly things today.
And I'm sure that there are links to all that on your website.
Yeah, there's links to everything on my website. Okay. And the Christmas album is also for sale directly from my website. And I do have to say, like, when people purchase music directly from the artist, that is the best way to help the artist. If, you know, people stream our music, or if people, you know, buy a CD from like Target or Amazon or something like that, it's wonderful. But the artist never sees any compensation for that at all. If you buy the music directly from us, if you buy a CD from us at a show or from one of our websites, and this goes for every artist, not just me, then, you know, some of the proceeds actually go into the artist's pocket. So it's a nice way to be able to support the artist a little more. So I try to make people aware of that, you know.
I always try to ask people to support the artists that they like. You hear a song on The Sounds of Christmas, or really anywhere, and you really like that song, find out where the artist is, if they're on Bandcamp, if they have their own website, wherever it is, and get it from them, and get a hat or a keychain or something else, but get it so you can support them, not so that they'll be billionaires, but so that they can keep doing what they're doing, so Jane can keep getting on the planes.
And honestly, yeah, it's true. And honestly, just buying tickets to a show, just showing up at a show, really affects our ability to get booked again. You know, the more bodies are in the room the more likely the chances is we're going to be able to come to your town again. You know, if no one shows up, we don't get to come back, you know? So just really being a body in the venue is really important as well.
Lots of great ways to support the artist. Jane, this was so nice to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you so much for listening and for continuing to support the Sounds of Christmas station and podcast. Station is still on, of course. In fact, we've just started the new season. I know everybody isn't ready for Christmas music just yet, but when you are, head on over to soundsofchristmas.com and click on the tree or the player on the front page or on the Listen Now page. You can also grab our app in the Google Play Store and take the music with you wherever you go. As far as this podcast goes, we're now on over 30 podcasting sites. So if you didn't find us on your favorite today, just search for The Sounds of Christmas wherever you stream and download podcasts, and I'm pretty sure you'll see our tree. Then you can subscribe and you'll never miss another episode. If you have comments or suggestions on this episode, previous episodes, The Sounds of Christmas Station, The Sounds of Halloween, or The Standard Station, feel free to reach out to me on social media or through the website. Thanks again. And may you always believe in Santa Claus.